Today, the future is genuinely in our own hands with Lynette Zhang. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, that is Post covering finance and property news. I'm joined by Lynette Zhang. Lynette, lovely to see you again. How are you going?
Oh, wow. I'm very happy to be here, Martin. There's so many things that are going on. Wow.
Yes.
What an interesting market these days, no doubt.
Well, you know, we've been chatting about the markets for a long, long time and the implications for ordinary households. And I think at the moment, things are excessively confusing for many people. So let's try and dissect things. I thought I'd just start with this take. This is actually the 10-year US, right? It's now back at 4.797, where it was back in 2006. And I think that's a really interesting point to start thinking about, you know, bond yields going through the roof. And then if you look here, this is interesting. Global bond yields soar as the Fed bets ramp up. Everyone's now talking about prolonged issues in the Middle East and the Straits of Hormuz, global bonds rising higher. Kevin Walsh, you know, he's looking at that. In Australia, a stronger than expected inflation print, so expect more of the same there. And in fact, if you take that a little bit further, you know, you have a whole bunch of things going on, including just the obvious, which is that central banks are caught between trying to tame inflation, well, maybe, versus where the markets are going. The market's driven by, well, high debt, you know, 40 trillion in the US, 1 trillion Aussie in Australia. The massive funding now of the AI big investors. And I'm just looking at this thinking, from an ordinary person's point of view, this just looks crazy. What do you think about it?
Well, it is. It's very chaotic, but a lot of this is just indicative of the end of a currency's life cycle. And I think that Kevin Warsh used a very important term when he was talking about the fact that we're inside of a hall of mirrors. So the Fed is watching the markets are watching the Fed is watching the market, and on and on and on. So what are we really measuring here? What are we really looking at here? And that means that it's easy to understand why people would be confused, because those at the top are confused, you know? I mean, and you talk about the AI build out, and I haven't dug into this yet, but I was kind of curious because I did a piece on the AI build out recently. And, you know, the AI companies actually have the ability, so this is how they at least initially appease communities, to bring their own energy with them. Right? They can set up solar cells and battery racks and all of that. So I'm wondering, I don't know the answer to this yet, but because it just occurred to me this morning to look at it a little more deeply, why can't they just make themselves completely self-sustaining? But the part that really bothers me, because that's another question for another day, the part that bothers me is you have the hyperscalers that used to fund all of their growth internally from their earnings. And yet they are tapping these debt markets at enormous levels to do this AI build out at the same time that global governments, it's not just the US that is seeing interest rates back where they were. Look at Japan, look at Germany, look at, you know, I mean, globally, the bond traders, the bond vigilantes are saying, we are not getting paid enough for the risk that we're actually taking. So that's huge. You've got this competition. Spreads are very narrow in this competition. What could go wrong?
And let me just add to the AI conundrum, right? We have this circular financing going on. So yes, You've got the likes of NVIDIA, you know, the largest player in the system, effectively supporting a whole bunch of other people and placing a lot of bets. And it seems to me that the question for the AI story is, will the productivity benefits that are being mooted arrive soon enough to warrant the investment, or will the investment effectively be too huge and the returns never come? I noticed today that the compute fees that they're able to earn are dropping quite significantly. So I wonder whether the revenue streams that they're all predicated on will actually fall over. And I don't know what you think about, but this feels a little bit like, you know, 1999 with all of the build out of the tech pipes and all of those big players who ended up funding other people to be able to, you know, put the technology in place. And I'm thinking Cisco, right? And if you watch the Cisco slide, there was a huge run up and then it fell back down. And 20 years later, it's just a little bit higher than where it was. I have a nasty sense of deja vu.
Well, so do I. And who's going to be left holding the bag? Because when you talk about the circular financing, okay, I will loan you money to buy stuff from me. All right, that looks like income on my books, but now we've got a debt circumstance here. No problem. Let's securitize this debt. And hey, let's put it in pension plans because that's long-term. Well, they want to call it money. That's long-term investing currency, et cetera. So we know that what we're really seeing is a massive level of risk transfer from those few to the many, because those guys have safe harbor. So they can blow up the system like we saw in 2008, and to your earlier point, like we saw in 99. Who went to jail? Nobody. Because it's not illegal. But who paid for it? It's always the little guy that pays for it, the public that pays for it, because you've got institutional investors that are transferring that risk to the many that don't know enough to look. They don't know what they're looking at, and they don't understand it. This stuff is made intentionally complex. So these things bother me a lot, but they don't surprise me, unfortunately.
No.
I'd like to be surprised.
Yeah, there's a set of behaviors, isn't there? And the big guys like to make it sound really sophisticated and really exciting and really innovative, all of those things, supported, of course, by, you know, the financial system and the central planners, because they're all very much of the same ilk. And, you know, when you think about central banking and what they're trying to do, which is to try and tame inflation, having, of course, spent a long time with inflation much lower than where it should be, and then all of a sudden it's a lot higher. Do they really want to do that?
First of all, they create it. They're the ones that create this crap. And then what are they fighting? Are the prices going to go back down? Well, we might get a little bit of snapback if we get some oil prices down, so at the pump, which is very visible. But this is our losses. The public's losses are cumulative, that loss of purchasing power. That's by design. If you actually go back and read their work, this inflation is intentional. And the job of the central banks is to regulate the rate and speed of that inflation. So when they say inflation's going down, people hear, oh, well, that means things must be getting better. No, it's just the rate of that loss. And I'll tell you, because I've been doing a lot of work in this area lately, what is really happening that I see are the new financial rails being built, because we've been in a crypto winter, right? So people have been kind of turning away from that area. And yet the rails, the control rails underneath all of this system, that's been going on great guns. So even if we're looking over here at AI, there's another piece to this that I think is the most important, because what people should understand is when we had gold in our system, this is the asset. You're holding money outside of the system. Then we went to this, which is just debt that removes the sound money from you. Now, you still have some level of control if you use cash, because even though this is a debt instrument, Federal Reserve note, I love how the U.S. is so obvious about it, hiding in plain sight. But if you use cash, that's still invisible to the banks. The new rails are really about control. So if all of your wealth goes into these rails, and the government and the corporations can track and control everything that you do, how much further away does that remove us from our power? This is why it's so critically important to demand sound money redeemable, not backed. That's garbage. Doesn't mean anything. Look at Zimbabwe, right? You have to be able to take possession of it. And I wish, Martin, that I could see another way to do this, for the public to take their power back. But what I see these new rails doing is taking us right back to feudal times, right back there. Is that what we want for our children? I don't think so. It's not what I want for my children, I'll tell you that.
Well, presumably you're talking about things like stablecoin and the Genius Act, right? Which is effectively the new financial system, which is being plumbed in place, you know, in plain sight at one level, but nobody really gets what it's actually about. And then if you think about the way that central bank digital currencies link into that and the information around transactions and the control that is implied by that, that is, and then if you actually overlay that back to our conversation about data centers and AI, these are not separate things, right?
No, these are actually not
two ends of the same story. And as you say, you end up effectively then with the controls are in place, the rules are in place, and, well, the financial system is then being used and manipulated for the few against the many.
Voila! I could not have said that better myself, honestly. And, you know, money's supposed to have four key functions. It's supposed to be a tool of measure so we can price things, a tool of barter so we can trade back and forth, a standard of payment so we can get fairly paid for our labor and settle debts. But the most important function is a long-term store of value for your labor. Right? What are you getting paid for? You're getting paid for your labor. Money is supposed to carry the value of your labor through time, whether you want to use that money today or in 10 years, or you want your family to use it in 1,000 years. So when we went on to the fiat money standard after 1971, well, they eliminated that long-term store of your labor's value. I've started referring to it more like that because it makes it more personal and it's a more accurate statement than just saying, well, gold is a store of value. People go, meh, right? But when you stop to realize that I cannot go back last week and rework those hours again, those are gone. Well, then I want my money to hold that value through time. And so when we go into this new system, all right, into the fiat money system, we lost that one. I can see us losing or modifying greatly two more functions. You brought up stable coins. Perfect, because I think that that's, I could be wrong about this, but I think that that's what's going to usher in the hyperinflation. But think about what the stable coin actually is. That's not the new system. It's still dollar backed. I think it's a mechanism to capture people because really anybody can issue a stable coin. And so let's say Amazon issues its stable coins and they will give you all sorts of incentives to use their stable coin inside of their system, which means that your ability to go and shop wherever you want could become very limited, right? And what did the central banks say when they were looking, you know, years ago, and they continue to say this, negative rates are a choice. Wait a minute. Stop and think about what those words mean. negative rates are a choice. So I'm going to work my butt off to try and save some of the value of my labor, but I'm going to loan it to you that I don't even know. I'd probably do this for my children, but let's say I'm doing it for a government or a corporation. I don't even know. And I'm going to accept back even less in nominal terms, even forget the purchasing power loss for a second. I'm going to accept less in nominal terms. That's insanity. But these central bankers say that's a choice. They tested those negative rates after the great financial crisis. We were in zero interest rate policy for what, 15 years or so, which is part of what the problem is today. But when you're looking at that, what are you really seeing? You're seeing the control rails put in place, because now when your paycheck automatically hits that bank account, those negative rates immediately begin to erode your principal. So those are two. So what does that mean? That means the new system is just a pricing mechanism and a limited tool of barter and not a standard of payment at all. Why is that okay? That is not okay. That makes holding sound money, physical gold and silver outside of the system, that much more, way more important than it's ever been before. And no, I will not let them tokenize. If I have a choice, I will not let them tokenize my wealth.
Yeah. And it is, you know, hard for people to get their head around. But an analogy for me is, if you go back 20, 30, 40, 50 years, the amount of debt in the system was quite low, and the debt has grown and grown and grown. Not only corporate debt and public debt, but household debt. We've got to the point now where people are trained effectively to work within a system where the assumption is you're going to borrow more and more and more, right? And so if you look at the average household, they've got significantly more debt than previously. In Australia, we've got a lot of people who are actually up to their eyeballs in debt at the moment with big mortgages. And then interest rates start to go up, and that means that they have to put more of their income against the interest that's being charged, which means they've got less capacity to do other things. And they're then trapped in this system that they can't get out of. Now, that was built, I think, by design. And I think that the same is being played out again, with the stakes probably even higher this time, given the fact that the technology is perhaps more sophisticated. And so, you know, we are creating ourselves for ourselves a digital prison within which it will be impossible to live outside it, unless we're very, very smart and very alert to what's going on. And I believe that, you know, this isn't just a happenstance. There are people laying the foundations and the strategies and all of these things, and it will be revealed over time. But what that means is that people need to be right on top of this now, because decisions are being taken. And I would say that some of our politicians, who, well, some of them probably know what's going on, a lot of them are just taking what they're being delivered top down and say, oh, well, if it's the World Economic Forum or whoever, it must be fine.
Right. And all of the lobbying. I mean, I was just reading yesterday, here in the U.S., the Republicans have a super PAC of over $1 billion to spend on these midterm elections. Oh, I don't know. If you look at, and these are anonymous donors, I'm pretty sure there are no hyperscalers in that $1 billion. I'm pretty sure that that's certainly nothing nefarious would ever happen to these politicians. That's the whole reason why we really need to take our power back, because we don't have anybody representing our best interests. We have the entities that have deeper pocketbooks that are creating those rules. And look, who reads them, right? You're just going to have to deal with it. And that goes back to my mantra, really, because to your point, do you want to be a slave? You have to create options for yourself and your family and the world, right? So that means you have to create surety in food, water, energy, security, barterability, which for me is primarily silver, but not exclusively, wealth preservation, which for me is primarily gold, but not exclusively, community has risen to the very top of everything that I talk about, because we can't just be an island. We have to come back together and start talking and shelter. And if you have surety in all of those things, and a community brings all of those different skill sets and different assets and all of that, then when you're in a circumstance and the government says jump, you can go, nope. If everything you have is intangible and in the system, and they tell you to jump, you're going to have to say how high. So we need to become a lot more self-sufficient. And, you know, look, I knew in 2008, 100%, I knew the system died. That's when I became an urban farmer, for goodness sakes. That was never anything that I wanted to do. I mean, I was concerned about the food supply. I'm not going to lie. You know, when things look too perfect, I don't know. That's not what they look like when you pull an apple off the tree. It's going to have some blemishes on there. So, you know, I'm not going to say that I lost confidence in the food supply, but I'm a historian. I mean, I've studied this stuff on some level my entire life, all different things. And I can tell you that I have watched them degrade the monetary system. And then the next one was to degrade the food system, because if you're eating bad food, you can't think as clearly. And if you have to work more hours, you can't watch what the government's doing as well. Those are their words. I mean, not verbatim, but that's what they said. And then in the 60s, leading up to removing us from the gold standard completely, the world, it wasn't just the U.S., the world, they were anticipating separating the family units. So where the family core was the most important, and kids would come home from school and there'd be, you know, somebody there to have milk and cookies with them, talk to them, and influence how they felt about things, with everybody in the workforce, who becomes more important? The school system does. That's who becomes more important. This was all by design. All you have to do is go back and read their own documentation, not airy-fairy sites or weird sites or whatever. Go back and read the documentation, and then you have to say to yourself, is this okay with me? And if it's okay with you, don't do anything. But if it's not okay with you, then you have to start moving forward in a manner that supports what you're trying to accomplish for yourself and those people that you love. Because the government and the central bankers and the hyperscalers and the one percenters, they don't care about you. They're just thinking about themselves. And I have to say, we've been trained to think more and more and more about ourselves. All right, make sure you have food, make sure you have sound money, make sure you have a good foundation, and then think bigger than yourself. Because if you're an island and you're only one person, you're going to be limited in what you can do and the influence that you can have. But if you come together in local community to create those sureties, and in global community to demand sound money, redeemable gold back in the system, call me crazy, whatever, but I think that 3% can overwhelm 1%, particularly since that's what happened in the Revolutionary War here in the U.S. It wasn't 99 or 100% or 50. It was a vocal 3% that started the Revolutionary War. It is time for another revolution. And look at the kids growing up now. Gen Z. This is happening all around the world. They're gambling. They're gambling. Why? Because the path that they've been told to take, you know, get an education, get a job, you'll be able to buy a house, you'll be able to educate your children, you'll be able to retire. They're seeing that that's been a lie. And so at the same time, you've got all of this growth in gambling. You know, I mean, it kills me when I'm looking at Bloomberg and I see these, you know, will the Federal Reserve raise the interest rates in August, or blah, blah, or who's going to wear a brown suit tomorrow? What is that? That is not investing. But the younger generation, and this is typical, this is something that happens 100% of the time. They don't trust the path. They don't see a path. So they turn to the easier path. And that's, you know, that's a guess.
Absolutely.
It's not a good way to invest.
Now, one of the things that I want to just touch on, because I've been doing a lot of work on this, and that is the relationship between the food industry and the bad food that is being shipped out to people, and the drugs industry that effectively is now selling drugs that actually allows people to lose weight from the food that's actually being sold to them to put the weight on. And I think this structure is something that people have not thought through properly, right? This is engineered again, going back to who's in control, right? So there is an agenda. We will make food more available, but it's actually not necessarily good food. And then we'll sell you more drugs. And so there are people on who will be on drugs now for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Who are the winners? The big corporations, or once again,
pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, also own all the seed companies. I mean, it's a very small, that's it. We've got monopolies all over the place. They'll put a whole bunch of things in the grocery store in different packaging so that you think you have choices. But in reality, when you go and you look behind the screens like you did, you don't have any choices. You are being nudged in this direction or that direction. So, you know, I kind of go back to, if your eyes are open, you have to determine whether that's okay with you or not. I can't determine that for you. I can only determine it for me. But I can be here and stand strong to say that you have your own choices. Here's an education. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anybody's word for it. This is all about the big corporations, the pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies. These are the entities that are driving all of this bus. I grow about 85% of all of my food. I'm working on 100%, and I've been working on this diligently since 2010. That's why I also appreciate the value of community so much, because we don't have the same luxury of time that I had when I first started. But yeah, we have to be smart enough to just ask questions, start asking these questions, like, whose benefit is this for? And, you know, lately I've been challenging viewers to just take one thing, right? One thing that you own, track your access to it, and who has to perform in a, for you to have access to it. Look at a bank account, right? Your perception is that you, that's your money. It's not legally your money, but that is your perception. And you also perceive that you can access it whenever you want. But I can tell you for an absolute fact, I've lived on this planet a long time, and there have been times, and even when I've been traveling, that I go to use a credit card and it's declined. Or, you know, I go, I think one time, I guess I owed the IRS like 10 bucks. It was some little bit of money without warning, boom, they just froze my whole account. So they have to perform in order for me to access the wealth that's in this system. Nobody has to perform for me to access the wealth that you see in my hand.
Yeah.
And we have to really think about that, you know, and I think that's what you and I both do, is try and help people think a little bit past assumptions.
Mm. Well, I'm a philosopher, so I always want to say the why question. Why is it like it is? What's really going on? What's the real agenda? What's the agenda behind the agenda? What does it all mean? And look, I don't necessarily have all the answers, but some of the questions that I want to ask are a bit deeper than many actually feel that they can ask, either because they've never had the chance to ask those questions, or they're too busy just sort of trying to keep the old, you know, legs going on the roller coaster to be able to keep running fast enough to be able to pay the bills. But it's really important to ask these questions. Now, I want to ask you one last question before we finish up. I don't know whether you saw this, but I was amazed to see that the Netherlands have just moved 86 tons of gold out of the US due to, quote, geopolitical unrest, as experts warn it's no longer safe under Trump. I wanted just to touch on de-dollarization and to what extent you think this is actually an important trend to watch too. I think it really is. I think that we are actually at a very interesting and important inflection point. And that announcement of taking gold out of the US and putting it back into Europe, I think back to the Bank of England, I think is quite symbolic.
I think it is symbolic. And I think there's a lot of pieces and parts to this, because this is not the first repatriation that we've seen in the last number of years. And what I've been witnessing over time is a lot more repatriation of the gold that's held in the U.S., though, if I were a government, I got to be honest, I'm not sure that I would feel as comfortable holding it at the Bank of England, because they don't have any gold, and they sure shipped over a whole lot of gold that they didn't really own a couple of years ago. But I think that this is indeed a growing trend for the repatriation, and it would not surprise me to see the Dutch government come out and bring it home. Because if you don't hold it, you don't own it, regardless of what your perception is. And we've seen this before, too, where Germany was repatriating the gold from the U.S., but they had to wait a long time to get all their gold back. Why? So, and I have a feeling that there are going to be a number of countries that discover this with the Bank of England. I could be wrong. I might not know this, but.
Well, interestingly, the Reserve Bank of Australia has put their gold in the Bank of England. They held it in the Bank of England for a number of years. In fact, I was talking to some of the politicians who were trying to lobby to get an audit done of the gold in the Bank of England. And they had terrible trouble trying to get an audit done. So there is a very interesting question about how much gold is there really there? You know, has it been sort of moved on or whatever? But this is symbolic, right, of the lack of trust in the system. And just bringing that back, this one here, the Reserve Bank of Australia has now cut the US dollar reserves in a sign of a hedge against Trump. So it's quite interesting that they've rejigged it and they've got less US dollars they're putting into other currencies. So this de-dollarization, this idea that you can't trust the US, you can't trust the US financial system, is really taking ground.
Oh, it is. Well, you know, what have we been seeing? We've been witnessing for a long time a shift in the allies. Right. I don't know quite who our allies are anymore, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't, because we are kind of a bully. You know, I mean, that's what's happening. So, yeah, the de-dollarization actually started. Well, if you look at Japan and China, which were huge buyers of our treasuries, that started to decline in 2008. And also the other challenge that the U.S. has, I mean, that's what the stable coins are really about, is to create some level of relevance for dollars just to maybe keep it going a little while longer. I mean, I don't really think that the stable coin is the be all end all. I think just like they took sound money, and I have all of the evidence from the horse's mouth on all this, and used corporate debt, converted corporate debt into Federal Reserve notes. And the beauty part of the US dollar, because I don't recall seeing this on the Aussie dollar or most other currencies, actually, and I have a bunch of them here, we spell it right out, hiding in plain sight, Federal Reserve note. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation, and a note is a debt instrument. And we were taught to call this money. This is not money, it's debt. And so we're working for corporate debt, which is why they can easily manage or create that inflation. That's the design of it. We've got to tell them, no, that's not okay. And I will point out, this is a pre-1933. It says right on here, $20 This is a $20 Federal Reserve note. Both of them are dollars. What can I buy with this? Not much. What can I buy with this? Same thing I could buy 5,000 years ago. Thank you very much. This carries the value of my work through time.
Excellent. Well, Lynette, I've enjoyed this exploration into the financial system and, you know, the potential de-dollarization and AI and all of those things. But I want to bring it finally back to this last point, because it's something that you and I both believe. What local communities do and how local communities think is ever more important now than ever before, because the truth is that the political system is not working for ordinary people, either in the US or in Australia or elsewhere, right? And so it's actually down to what local communities and local people do. And if they wanted to really take a step in a different direction, the momentum that they could create if they did that would be remarkable. The question is, do we actually have enough vision to be able to do that, or do we actually want to hide back in the box and assume that somebody up there knows what they're doing and you know, everything will be fine? The truth is, the future actually is in our own hands.
Yes, exactly. And you know, you don't even have to have everybody like-minded. A community, there are differences and you have to support each other. And guess what? You can learn from each other. But what I personally do in my neighborhood, since I became an urban farmer, is I'm on a very prominent corner. I don't have a lot of land. It's just half an acre, but I planted out fruits, nut trees and vegetables, et cetera, on the whole exterior of my property. And so I don't really know how much my neighbors know about what I do or any of that. But what they do know is that they can come and pick a pomegranate. They can come and pick some herbs or some vegetables. And, you know, I know at Christmas time, I find all sorts of little, you know, maybe a bottle of wine or a little note, thank you, or what have you. And so I know that they do that. And that is one of the ways that I built my local community and what I have time and energy to do. But just how can I help? Because we also, I've recently discovered this, and I've started shifting, but I haven't made the full shift yet because I'm a little overwhelmed. But we have to also, I've discovered, it's bottom up and top down, because these politicians, if they don't hear from you, the local constituents, and I'm not talking about the ones at the federal level, I'm talking about the ones at the local level. We have to become more verbal, because we need them to know what we want. If we don't give them guidance, then all they're doing is getting the guidance from the hyperscalers or what have you. I'm happy to see on a global basis that local communities are pushing back on some of these data centers now, you know? So that's showing that there is movement in the local communities, but I think we need to get a bit more involved in the very local politics, because you can talk to them. They are like people like you and I are. So I do a once a month, a Sound Money Hour, but they're experts. I'm not, I'm learning. But you know, I tax everybody to look in the mirror and to first of all, answer whether or not what you see is okay with you. And if it's not okay with you, then you gotta say, if not me, who? And if not now, when? You and I, we can lead, but it's the viewers. That's the army. That's the army.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons why these shows are so important, because it hopefully gives people some ammunition, some ways of thinking, and you know, some encouragement to make your local voice known, and then reach out and you know, make sure that your local representatives understand what's important for you, whether it's fixing the potholes or whatever it is, right?
Rather, sound money. I don't know. Legalizing sound money on a local basis, enforcing the federal government. What a concept.
Exactly. Lynette, as always, great pleasure. Thank you very much. If people want to find out more about you, where do they go?
Oh, wow. I'm all over the place. On X, it's at the Lynette Zhang, and on all other channels. So YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. It is at Zhang, Zhangintl. We're very, very active.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for your time. Really enjoyed speaking with you. And we'll do it again sometime down the road, because these issues are going to get ever more important. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Lovely. I think I covered everything I wanted. Thank you.
Good.
Always have fun chatting with you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I'll gaze up over the next couple of days, and I'll send the link through as well.
Awesome. Do you want to corroborate?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send you the collaboration if you like. Yeah, easy.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll happily do that.
Lovely. I'll do that too. Thank you. Take care. Talk again soon.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.